Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyu and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio and Podcast. According to World Health Organization, anxiety disorders are the most common mental disorders affecting 301 million people in 2019. Symptoms of anxiety have often onset during childhood or adolescent. And even though there are significant effective treatments for anxiety disorders available to everyone, many people still struggle to discuss about anxiety and understand their symptoms. Today, I've invited again Dr. Belinder Walia, psychotherapist and author of Fix Me, How to Manage Anxiety and Take Control of Your Life, to discuss further the topic of anxiety. We had a good feedback from our listeners. And apparently, the need to hear more about anxiety and about the ways to manage anxiety is higher than ever. So welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show, Belinder.
Hello, Andrea. Thank you for having me back. And it's always exciting to speak about my book, and it's always a pleasure to speak to you. So we're on to part two now.
We are indeed. Apparently, it's a very requested topic, and I'm not surprised. I was giving at the beginning of the show some statistics from 2019, but I think things have significantly changed after this year because we know we've entered the pandemic period, isn't it? And I'm hearing more and more people complaining, and often with very painful stories about anxiety and how to tackle anxiety. And even though there's plenty of medication and support available out there, there's still a bit of stigma around anxiety. And I know your book has very practical aspects that we can all read and understand easily. So to be fair, this is the reason why I said, well, why not? Let's have Dr. Belinder Walia again. Let's continue the conversation. Let's see if there's anything that we missed last time, and we can bring some support to the people who are listening to us. So in a nutshell, I know it's very hard to put everything in a nutshell when it comes to your book, because it's quite a thick research and recollection of your personal experiences with anxiety. But in a nutshell, why do you think your book is a bit different from other books? Why do you think it's important to at least attempt to go through it once to see maybe we find something useful in there? Tell us a bit about the book and a bit about your drive to write this book, because I know that, you know, starting to write such a comprehensive book does require time and energy. So I'm just curious about all of it. That was a very long introduction, Belinder. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's absolutely fine. And I think I'll give a quick relay of what the book is. And it's basically a transformative guide to help people to overcome some of the challenges that they face with anxiety. The reason behind writing the book in the first place was because I sadly have suffered from anxiety myself. And I do share the anecdotes of my experience, my personal experience, as well as my professional experience. And really, it's to help individuals utilize the strategies and the Fix Me tools that come under every chapter. And there's quick Fix Me tools at the beginning. And it's to manage that anxiety, regain the control that they need to understand their own triggers, to be able to understand their own thought patterns and behavior, and recognize that these factors can develop. If you understand your triggers, of course, you can then develop your own personalized coping styles and mechanisms, which you can then practice. And the more you practice, the better you become at understanding what works for you rather than what doesn't. And it's all good and well. There's lots of tools out there, but you've got to understand yourself enough to know what works in your favor rather than doesn't. And there's also lots of references made in the book and strategies given to help build self-awareness, resilience, and for people to embrace personal growth.
Belinder, one of the things that always made me quite curious around anxiety and how people talk about anxiety was the fact that there seemed to be a bit of shame around it and the fact that they cannot seem to overcome this. So that made me think about what is really the expectation we have from ourselves when we're dealing with such a difficult issue like anxiety. Are we self-compassionate at any point in the process? What do you think is the importance? Is self-compassion important in managing our anxiety, in taking control on our life? Is there anything that you can tell us that will look into that?
Yes, absolutely. I think self-compassion plays a major role because it's a very powerful tool when when we have those mitigating effects of anxiety. If we have that fix me attitude, it helps you to actually feel that self-compassion. Let me elaborate a little bit more. I mean, how a person can do this is by nurturing themselves and having a supportive relationship with themselves. You see, when individuals cultivate self-compassion, they can create a space of understanding and acceptance for their own experiences and emotions. As I said earlier, if you understand yourself well enough, of course, you understand your triggers, you understand your emotions. This allows you to approach the anxiety that you're feeling and yourself with kindness rather than self-criticism. You see, fear and panic, especially panic attacks, can trigger other emotions. For instance, where sometimes you can spiral even further with that shame and embarrassment of your reaction if you are feeling anxious about something. And when you understand those emotions and you're self-reflecting and you have that self-compassion, you can switch that to not be so judgmental, not have that feeling of fear or embarrassment. That's why when you can identify that you feel these emotions and you really are in touch with what's going on in your mind, body, and physically within you, you can assess your internal self as well as your external self. We usually assess our external self to see if we're safe. And once we know we're safe, we can then instinctively focus on those anxious feelings that have triggered us and what's made us have the event or panic that we have. But we should be kinder in the sense that we should use words that are empathetic towards ourselves and practice tools that we have learned in the past that make us feel good and safe. You see, the practice of self-compassion is inner nurturing, which a lot of people don't really practice so much. We're very good at giving empathy to others, but not so much to ourselves. But when we're nurturing ourselves, we can use it as an anchor during times of anxiety, and we can provide, it provides us with a sense of comfort as well. And I think it's important to comfort yourself and understand those emotions so you can build that resilience when you're going through challenging times or emotions. And I think self-compassion plays a pivotal role in empowering us as well. When we feel empowered, we could take ownership of our lives and take control of what's happening around us. I think a person can shift their perspective if they're having self-doubt, they can, and they're feeling quite critical, they can be more self-accepting of what's going on around them, feel more empowered when they have that control. And you see, it's so often that we have people checking in on what's happening around them, am I safe, but they don't, and they look around and they realize that external safety is okay, but they don't check in internally, am I safe, what is it that I'm feeling, what is it that I'm reacting to, what can I do to help myself feel better? So I think most definitely self-compassion plays a major role.
Belinda, let's think about this scenario. You have someone who's experiencing the first episodes of high anxiety. They're getting ready to attend a friend's wedding and the anxiety is off the roof.
Yeah.
And with that comes a lot of, oh, why can't I just control myself? Why can't I be like everyone else? Why do I always have this type of behaviors exactly when I needed the least, right? So instead of thinking that, I know psychotherapists don't advise, but if you are to give an advice or to give your thoughts or your recommendations about what would be a more supportive and self-compassionate response, what would you say?
It's the self-talk technique, that nurturing technique. Treat yourself as you would your best friend. Understand yourself enough to know that if you're going to have destructive words, they are going to impact you more and more. And not to self-sabotage, because of course, when you're doing that, you're spiraling even further into that self-sabotaging mindset. And, shift the mindset. When you shift that mindset, you can actually approach obstacles and uncertainties with a sense of inner strength and resilience, and know the techniques that work for you that help you build that resilience and enable you to make more confident and grounded decisions. And that's why I say you might be aware of your external environment. Once you assess that you're safe, check in with yourself positively internally before you spiral further into that destructive mode or that self-sabotaging mode. You've got to be able to then say, okay, if I'm not in danger, what is my fear? What, recognize what the trigger is. I nearly said tigger then. So understand what the trigger is and what it is that is impacting you in that way where you are, being affected, where you lose that control. If you understand yourself well enough, you know what it is that makes you feel that destructive mode or that self-sabotaging mode. And I said it in the last series as well. I think when you have that self-awareness and you know, if you continuously practice what works for you, then it's easier to automatically respond to moments where you are spiraling into that destructive mode.
One of the things that you mentioned that really intrigued me, Belinda, was about self-sabotage. So I know in your book you explore the connection between anxiety and sabotage. So tell us a bit more about how do we break free from self-sabotaging behaviors? How do we manage stress effectively? Actually, there's our two questions, but let's start with self-sabotage first. How do we eliminate these behaviors?
Yes, so in chapter 8 in my book, I talk quite extensively about self-sabotaging behaviors. I think it's important to address the connection between the anxiety and the self-sabotage, because that way people can begin to develop that self-awareness again. And you'll hear me say self-awareness quite a lot during this recording. And people can, once you identify those patterns of behavior that lead to that self-sabotage during times of stress, for instance, and through introspection and self-reflection, you can recognize again those things that are triggering that behavior or that habit that contribute to the self-sabotage, such as negative self-talk or procrastination or even avoidance. And once these patterns are identified, you can work on developing strategies to interrupt and shift these behaviors. And this might involve practicing positive self-talk or switching those words around if they're negative, switching them to more positive ones, breaking tasks into smaller, manageable steps if you're procrastinating, seeking social support or engaging in stress reduction activities such as exercise or creative expressions. I mean, I In the book, I give an example. I use writing a to-do list every day to help me not procrastinate. I still do it because it's become a habit and it's been a positive habit that's worked for me. So I use writing a to-do list to help me keep short and manageable tasks at hand and not fall into that spiraling, let's say, habit I used to have of procrastination, although I've not procrastinated for many years, but still, I still continue good habits because I think it keeps me going. And when you implement these strategies and you build on a toolkit that helps you manage the anxiety and stress, people can gradually break free from that self-sabotaging behavior and develop healthy, more constructive responses to the stress or the anxiety that they might feel. Creative people express themselves with doing creative hobbies and things like that. And also, when you implement these changes, I'll probably end up answering both of the questions. When you implement these changes, you're promoting that self-compassion again. And also, you're being quite forgiving towards yourself, because I think it's essential to be kinder to yourself by being more forgiving. If you do fall behind in something, or you do spiral, or you feel embarrassed about falling into that self-sabotaging trap, you shouldn't then dwell on that. You should move on from it and recognize that sometimes we're only human. We do have setbacks, and challenges are a natural part of human experiences. And that's where the self-compassion comes into play as well. It allows you for learning and the growth from that experience instead of that self-criticism. And the point is that we shouldn't fear our own emotions. And I think that's what people are very cautious about. That's it's a block of happiness, really. It blocks your joy.
Do you think there is a connection between self-sabotage and fear of happiness? It sounds a bit awkward, doesn't it? But are we afraid of being happy, do you think?
Okay, I'll probably go off on a tangent on this one, because my experience, and in chapter 13 in the book titled Fear of Happiness, funny enough, I talk about the reasons why I believe people have this fear of happiness. So look, when I was younger, I was around family and friends. I'm from an Indian background, and I've come across this quite often. I don't know if you have, but I'll get to the point in a moment. But coming from an Asian background, people used to often say to my mother, "Oh, your daughter laughs too much, and you should be careful. She's always happy." And there was this fear that they had of happiness. They used to say the fear of joy is some evil force. If you laugh too much, an evil force will take it away. And for me, it was all based around something Asians know as nazar, the evil eye. Mm-hmm. And it was a cultural thing. I was brought up with this fear of joy, because if I laughed too much, people would put this evil eye on me. And it wasn't until my teenage years I had this epiphany that, oh gosh, you know, I know my personality. I'm quite aware of who I am and what I'm about, and I shouldn't allow other people to influence me negatively. And their expectations of me are not more valid than my own expectations of myself. And if I find joy, I don't want it blocked, and I don't want to please them because they fear the joy. And by acknowledging and addressing these negative external influences made me change my perspective. And I believe if I am happy, I'm spreading that joy, and I am attracting the joy, and I'm breaking free from the fear, and I am deserving as anyone else to feel that joy and express it freely. But sadly, not everyone thinks like that. And this is why I focused chapter 13 on the fear of happiness, because often it's rooted in those internal conflicts that people have of their past experiences. The fear of happiness can contribute to a cycle of anxiety and self-sabotage. They feel making this connection is I feel that making this connection is essential, because when you understand it, the complex interplay between emotions and behaviors that shape an individual's experience, it can help individuals understand that this fear and embracing happiness and the strategies on self-awareness and acceptance and self-compassion are highly effective. And by encouraging individuals to identify and explore the root causes of their fear of happiness, why they have this fear, if it's external, like for me, it was external and the influence of society and culture, they can too gain a deeper understanding of their emotions and their thought patterns. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, the another aspect that if you have too much joy, then you're going to have that taken away. And I came across it on a podcast, funny enough, and I think it was, I shouldn't name anyone because I'm not sure if it was that person, but basically they were talking about how fear of happiness only comes when it's because people are scared of what they're pursuing is going to be taken away. So therefore, you should never share your plans with anyone or share good news until it's confirmed. And when I was going through my IVF, I recall when I went to see the doctor said, wait until we do the third scan, and then we will have that confirmation, then you can share your good news with everyone, because we don't recommend that you share your pregnancy with anyone before it is confirmed by the third month. And, you know, I don't know if people fear that that joy is going to be taken away or is premature, if the joy is premature.
I think it does come a lot from the back, from your background and your cultural beliefs, isn't it? And I think the majority of our thoughts are shaped by the society. And, you know, it might not be exactly, I might not have had a similar experience and a similar cultural aspect, but I think there is some element of making sure that, you know, no one is taking that away from you and keeping it safe. So I think it does have different ways of showing in different cultures. But it's an interesting topic, isn't it? Because you would think, oh, everyone wants to be happy. Of course, we all do. But subconsciously, there a series of thoughts that are actually are going against this this happiness, isn't it? And it's actually a subconscious fear of just being happy. And I think there's also a level of giving up being a victim. I know this might be controversial, but it's quite known in psychology of the fear of giving up what is allowing you to be a victim. Because you got so used to being in that particular state. It might be physical state, it might be mental state. Again, not applicable to all cases, but there are cases when you're so used to do that and think that, then if someone is to, if you are to be better, feel better, then some of the advantages will be taken away from you. So then subconsciously, you're just maintaining this victimhood, isn't it? That aligns perfectly with the fear of happiness. Belinda, let's take a couple of moments for commercial break, and then we'll come back to you, because I want us to discuss mindfulness and other ways of keeping our brain happy and excited in a good way. We'll be back with Dr. Belinda Walia in a second.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Belinda Walia. We're discussing anxiety and how can we explore the idea of self-sabotage, the idea of what else did we talk about? I think it was self-sabotage, isn't it? And fear of happiness in the context of anxiety. Belinda, can you provide us a couple of insights into the role of mindfulness and grounding techniques that will potentially help us reduce anxiety and promote, in general, a better way of feeling or an overall well-being?
Yeah, sure, Andrea. I mean, mindfulness and grounding techniques play, a pivotal role in reducing anxiety and a person's overall well-being. And I do delve into the transformative power of mindfulness, which involves maintaining a present focused awareness of thoughts and emotions and bodily sensations. So if we go back to the first question you asked me about self-compassion, you can see when you're practicing mindfulness, of course, this will help people develop a heightened sense of themselves and a deeper connection to the present moment. And the practice enables people to observe and acknowledge their own thoughts and feelings without judgment. That's really important because without judgment, reducing the intensity of anxious thoughts and promoting a sense of calm and clarity. So when you are mindful of your the present moment, you're mindful of your external environment, you then become very mindful of yourself and what you're feeling. And they can do this by using the grounding techniques, which provides tangible tools. There's lots of tools in the book for people to anchor themselves in the present moment. And these techniques are often they are very sensory based, like practices such as deep breathing, visualization, or physical touch to create a sense of safety and stability, and incorporating techniques like in your daily life, such as I'm making reference to my book again. On page 158, I talk about the Fix Me tools and making people aware of being mindful. So you've got be aware of your breathing, be aware of your body, walk mindfully, eat mindfully. That's really important. Keeping a journal, practicing mindful listening, all these things play a role in grounding techniques to help people enhance their overall sense of well-being and building that resilience as well. So I think it's really important to understand that.
What I was particularly interested in one of your comments regarding, you know, eating mindfully, walking mindfully. And I've noticed, because I struggle with anxiety quite a lot, and I've noticed the changes in my body. And I think more than the changes is the control I have on my body when I'm being careful with how I'm breathing and trying to rebalance that breathing, or what I'm eating. And sometimes, you know, I've discovered that eating quite late in the evening doesn't work for me, so I never do that because it just simply doesn't work for me. Or eating very fast does not work for me, so I'm very mindful of what I'm eating, when I'm eating, and how much I'm eating. And that works for me, which I discovered very recently after going through a series of situations where my anxiety was very high, and I couldn't pinpoint, like, what's the problem. And then I started to break it down. Okay, so what have I done before this? You know, what was my daily routine? What happened? What triggered this? Was this something that, you know, really upset me consciously, subconsciously? And then I went to those mindfulness steps that really helped me see exactly how can I take over my body. It's not perfect, but it's much better than it was before. And it's a process, isn't it? So I think we were discussing about the process and the, how long the process is in one of our previous episodes.
I mean, when, let's just say, for example, when you're eating mindfully, and again, going back to that whole concept of self-awareness, you should be able to be aware of what you're eating, appreciate the relationship you have with food. A lot of people don't have the good relationship with food. Rather than eating on autopilot or rushing through meals like a lot of people that are working tend to, rather than doing things like that, just practice mindfulness by savoring each bite, observing the colors, the textures, and the flavors of the food, and being fully present with the act of nourishing the food and your body, how your body is responding to it. Be mindful when you're eating allows you to develop a deeper connection, not only with your food, but when you are mindful, and this is probably something that a lot of people don't realize, the digestive intelligence, your gut brain, that a lot of people refer to it as the second brain, but when you're eating mindfully, your input is your output. So when you have mindful eating, it allows you to develop a deeper connection with your food, and your body signals, and you're aware of how your body is reacting. And if you eat healthy, of course, you've got a more balanced diet. It makes you feel comfortable in your tummy. It makes you feel, your mind then doesn't focus on your stomach. Your mind has clarity. It's not clogged up with ideas of, say, your tummy is clogged up. You know, it's the same approach to also be mindful of the way that you're chewing as well. And there's a lot that you can make reference to in the book, because in the book I do go on to talk about, and a lot of people laugh at this, but I do talk about the three brains, the metaphorically speaking, the three brains, the head brain, the heart brain, and the gut brain, and how we can improve that self-relationship. Because if we have an understanding of what suits us, like you were talking about, being mindful of what you're inputting as well, and being mindful of how your body is reacting to certain things, then of course you can have more clarity of how you're responding to it rather than reacting to it.
Bellinger, how does your book encourage individuals to develop a healthy self-relationship and cultivate this compassion as a foundation to manage anxiety and achieve personal growth? I know we spoke a bit about that, but if you have some like punctual things, like three bullet points that you can present to us that will work. And I'm not going to say quick fix, because that's completely wrong, but at least a good starting point, a healthy starting point.
Okay. I would say that people can develop a healthy self-relationship and cultivate that self-compassion by self-reflection. And in the book, it prompts individuals to engage in that self-reflection and gain an insight into their thoughts, their emotions, and self-perceptions of things and the environment, internal self. Through self-reflection exercises, individuals can explore their inner dialogue, recognize their self-criticism. They can identify areas where self-compassion is needed, that nurturing, and also they can have that empathy and understanding of themselves and treat themselves with as one would a best friend when they are facing challenges, and adopting a more compassionate attitude towards themselves is really important. I think also to there's techniques given in the book where if they're challenged by self-critical thoughts, to develop a more kinder inner dialogue. There's a section in the book where I talk about reframing that negative self-talk and replacing it with compassionate language, using affirmations that are positive statements that they can practice every day. The mindfulness techniques are in the book. And also, I think emotional regulation. Now, what I mean by that is emphasizing the role of that self-compassion in managing difficult emotions by acknowledging and validating their emotions, not just suppressing them or brushing them away. I think it's really important to soothe yourself and navigate that anxiety with greater emotional resilience. So that helps you. It encourages a person to adopt a more growth mindset by reviewing those setbacks and challenges as opportunities for learning and growth instead. And I think when people are faced with difficulties, that again, they can approach personal growth with kindness and understanding of themselves. They shouldn't feel that guilt if they are kind to themselves, or feeling a little bit sorry for themselves if they are. You know how you spoke about the victim mentality. I think there shouldn't be a fear of that. I think if anything, it's a self-care practice and lifestyle adjustment that they have to make, where if they are feeling woe is me, they've got to sit down and understand why they are feeling those emotions and understand themselves. So enough when they have that comprehensive understanding of themselves, then of course then they can help themselves heal from it and move on from it and learn from it with a more compassionate nature and nurturing mindset, growth mindset, as I said.
Belinda, we'll come back after the commercial break with some final thoughts, a final message for anyone that's suffering from anxiety, or is, you know, friends or having a family member who's suffering from anxiety. So we'll be back with Dr. Belinda Walia shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Belinder Walia. We are discussing anxiety and anxiety management. Belinder, a final message or a takeaway that you hope readers will have after reading Fix Me, or, you know, at the end of this conversation that will make them curious to explore further anxiety?
I would say, well, I think Lisa Nichols says it best, and there's a lot that readers can gain from reading the book. And I'm going to quote what she says about the book. She says, in this remarkable book, Belinder Walia shares her personal journey of overcoming anxiety with remarkable honesty and vulnerability. Through her experiences, practical advice, and heartwarming anecdotes, she offers a path of self-discovery and healing. Belinda's story of resilience, finding solace, and summoning the strength to rise above obstacles speaks directly to the hearts of those who have felt the suffocating grip of anxiety. With invaluable wisdom and tangible strategies, she guides readers from all walks of life towards self-love, self-healing, and self-relationship therapy. This book is a beacon of hope, shedding light on the importance of reinstating balance and finding peace amidst the life's challenges. Through Belinda's compassionate insights and effective self-care techniques, readers will be empowered to navigate their own anxiety and embrace a life of greater self-awareness and well-being. So I'm hoping that readers will take this away with them and feel that they are empowered by the knowledge that is shared within the book and the anecdotes from case examples and my own experiences. I hope it will help many people.
Belinda, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure as always. I wish you all the best and best of luck with the book. I hope it reaches as many hearts and souls as possible. Please, as always, share some of the links you have for your social media and your interaction platforms that listeners can click on and hear more about, see more about your work.
Sure. Thank you, Andrea. And Yes, you can find me at www.serenelifestyles.com, and I am on all the social media platforms. And if you want to connect, please connect with me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best platform you can connect with me on. And yeah, I'm pretty much accessible everywhere. And my book is available everywhere as well, which is great.
Thank you so much, Dr. Belinda Walia, and speak to you very soon.
Thank you.
Under Pressure is a song by the British rock band Queen and singer David Bowie. Originally released as a single in October 1981, it was later included on Queen's 1982 album Hot Space. The song reached number one on the UK singles chart, becoming the Queen's second number one hit in their home country and David Bowie's third. Let's listen now to Under Pressure. Until next time, may we hear only good things.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.